COVID-19 infections are rising again in China, and many health officials are concerned new variants are on their way. So could the world be facing another major outbreak, and will countries be forced to reimpose restrictions? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. Cases of COVID-19 are rising significantly in China days after it relaxed restrictions following widespread protests. Now fears are growing a resurgence of the virus may lead to new mutations and trigger another global health crisis. Neighbouring countries like India are stepping up surveillance, and the World Health Organization is urging Beijing to provide more information to help the world prepare better for a possible new wave of COVID-19. Katrina Hazem reports.
These people in China's capital are waiting to find out whether they have COVID-19. The government started reducing pandemic restrictions this month. But now infections are rising, along with virus-related deaths.
An increasing number of patients have tested positive for COVID-19, and we have seen a sharp increase in the number of patients at the fever clinic. We seem to be getting more and more patients every day.
The government stopped mass testing after widespread protests against its zero COVID policy. Official figures on case numbers aren't available, as Beijing has changed its testing and reporting criteria. And that's worrying the World Health Organization.
WHO is very concerned over the evolving situation in China, with increasing reports of severe disease. In order to make a comprehensive risk assessment of the situation on the ground, WHO needs more detailed information on disease severity, hospital admissions, and requirements for ICU support.
Fears are growing that coronavirus mutations could lead to another global health emergency.
There is always a risk that a new variant will emerge. It's really impossible to say how great that risk will be. It might be that Omicron is COVID-19's final trick to play, as it were, but we could see a new variant going forward.
Some countries are preparing for another major outbreak. In Thailand, doctors are urging people to get vaccine boosters after it recorded 700 new infections in December, the highest number this year. And in India, which has reported some of the highest numbers of COVID-19-related deaths in the world, the government has held an emergency meeting and stepped up surveillance.
We have begun random RT-PCR testing of 2% of passengers arriving from foreign countries at international airports.
People around the world have been celebrating the holiday season free of pandemic restrictions for the first time in 2 years. But with infections increasing, those rules may be brought back to avoid another crisis.
Let's bring in our guest. Joining us from New York is Dr. Wafaa Sadr. She is Professor of Epidemiology and Medicine at Columbia University. Andy Mok is Senior Research Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. He joins us by Skype from Beijing. Dr. Krishna Udayakumar is Founding Director of the Duke Global Health Innovation Center. He joins us by Skype from Raleigh, North Carolina, in the US. Welcome to the programme. Dr. Wafaa, the cases now, the spiking cases in infections in China, could it possibly become the biggest COVID outbreak the world has seen since 2019?
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity today. I think there is concern that a surge in China can, in a population that has largely been naive, has not experienced COVID-19 surges before, could really probably be one of the largest we have seen thus far. I think there are lots of things that remain unclear in terms of the protective effect of the vaccines that have been largely delivered and used in China. And then to also, as well, take into account the the population and how they will deal with the surge itself, whether the people will adopt some of the protective measures, like, for example, staying home, mm-hmm. avoiding large gatherings and so on. So I think there are lots of unknowns, but certainly there is concern that the potential is there for a very large surge in numbers of cases in China and potentially accompanied by a lot of potentially also hospitalizations and so on.
Okay. Andy, I mean, we'd like to understand what happened exactly in China. Now, it stood out for the last 3 years as a model for its zero COVID regime with the lockdowns and so on and so forth, into abandoning that strategy just a few days ago. And suddenly you have this surge in cases. What went wrong?
Well, I would question, Hashim, this description of China's current policies abandoning its COVID policy. So we all know that the first variant of COVID was infectious, but also fairly lethal. And what China recognized early on was that prevention was vital to minimize deaths. Now, I think it's commonly agreed that the virus has mutated quite a lot. The reproduction number I've seen, so the original Delta variant had a reproduction number of about 2. These current variants are at 20. So they are much, much more infectious, about as infectious as the measles, smallpox. But the good news is that it is much, much less lethal. And I'll tell you, on the ground here in Beijing, in the last week, I've seen surveys that 70% of people in Beijing have already been infected with COVID. So I agree with the doctor that this will be the largest number of infections, probably anywhere in the world. But the good news is that everyone around me, including me, was infected last week. People have described getting this variant of COVID as they've had worse hangovers. So I think it is fairly mild. Now, again, we should not discount, and the government is very active. So I would not say it's abandoned its policy, but it's shifted its policy from prevention to identifying and making sure that those that do become severely ill have the medical resources. Now, one very important point in China is that on a per capita basis, it has much fewer ICU beds. So this is a challenge, and it's not very visible. But the government is working very, very hard at every level to ensure there are more ICU beds available. The other piece of good news I would say is that I think that the Chinese population might be less vulnerable to severe outcomes. We see in places like the United States, perhaps some parts of Europe, that these comorbidities like obesity, other existing health conditions really contribute to terrible outcomes, including death. And fortunately, at least for now, I think China might be in a better position with regard to comorbidity.
Well, let me go to Dr. Krishna. Now, when you look at the figures, the government of China does not really seem to be forthcoming when it comes to the death toll. But when you look at the projections that 60% of the population is likely to be infected, and then within that segment of society, you have people with pre-existing you have the elderly and those with pre-existing health conditions. That could be an indication that we are likely to see a growing number of casualties and people affected by by COVID-19.
Absolutely. I'm much less optimistic, unfortunately, than our speaker we just heard from. I do think this is going to be not just a massive wave of infections, with some estimates that already more than 200 million people in China have been infected over the last 3 weeks. But I do think we are already starting to see many deaths occur. Of course, not reported in the data. We won't ever know what actually is happening from the official data. But if you look at the news that's coming out of crematoriums being overwhelmed and what we saw in other similar populations like in Hong Kong, the latest projections I've seen are deaths in China of 1 million or more, which would just be horrendous. So unfortunately, I do think we're going to see a massive shift here where we will start to see more deaths, hospitalization over the coming days and weeks. And our hope is that the health system can cope, but I'm not sure that's actually going to be the case with the type of spikes we're now seeing.
Wafa, there is a squabble over semantics here when it comes to the way the West interprets the death toll and the way China does. To just, for example, they have different criteria here. The Chinese authority is saying that we're basically looking into the deaths related to respiratory problems. That gives us an indication that this is directly linked to COVID-19. In the West, they're saying, no, we have to look into the overall number of deaths, including those who died of underlying conditions. Heart attacks could be an indication that this is something that could be linked to COVID-19. And I think this could explain why the Chinese said that just 8 people died this month of COVID-19.
Well, I think, you know, it's I think looking at the death from severe respiratory disease can give you a good sense of what's happening, particularly in the context of COVID-19 surge. I think it could be a good surrogate marker in terms of the numbers of death due to COVID. I think on the other hand, we always think of two things. One is dying due to COVID or death due to COVID and death with COVID. That is an incidental kind of a diagnosis of COVID when somebody's sick from another condition. I think nonetheless, I think what behooves the authorities in China and what others have done elsewhere is to be as inclusive as possible in terms of trying to get a sense of the severity of the illness, the magnitude of the effect of a virus like COVID-19 on the population overall. It seems to me that it's highly unlikely with the large numbers of cases that have been reported and infections reported in China that there would be only less than two handfuls of death that have been reported. Clearly, there are the elderly population is certainly more vulnerable to severe illness. Certainly, people with comorbidities and those exist in China like anywhere else are particularly vulnerable. In addition, we know that many people received vaccination way back, maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago, and protection has waned over time. And I do think that in a lot of ways, probably it behooves a country like China at this point in time to focus on how can you protect the most vulnerable, the elderly, people with comorbidities. How can there be measures put in place to protect those who are most likely to get severely ill and hospitalized and are at risk of dying from COVID-19? I think that needs to be the urgent priority at this point in time. Mm-hmm.
Andy, the number of the deaths which we see on social media in China is higher than the number presented by the authorities. Why are they somehow downplaying the number of deaths from COVID-19?
Well, first, I would agree with what the doctor just said, that I think prevention, especially amongst the elderly, is very, very important. And that certainly is going on. I think there's been another prioritization of vaccination of the elderly. So absolutely, I think that's correct. My understanding is the shift in the definition of COVID deaths actually reflects the underlying science in that the nature of the illness has changed. I think that's one of the reasons. You know, I would also say that this idea of these crematoriums being overwhelmed is kind of a media meme, and that if you read the Western news compared to what's, I think, the lived experience on the ground, it would seem two completely different worlds. And I would caution that the whole COVID pandemic, the Western media has gotten it pretty wrong, you know, from saying, first of all, that it's impossible to lock down such a large number of people. It wouldn't work, can't be done. And in fact, China did do that. In the Shanghai lockdown, there were reports of people starving to death. I don't believe anyone actually starved to death in Shanghai. So I would again caution that this humanitarian catastrophe, I believe the Washington Post described this as China's COVID nightmare, is really quite overblown. Now, clearly there are more people dying, without a doubt. And I think they are people that are most vulnerable, either the elderly with existing conditions. And clearly, I think the government is doing what it can to minimize that. Mm-hmm. But every policy has its costs. both intended and unintended as well. So I don't dispute that there are more deaths. I do question that is it as extreme as we're seeing in a lot of the Western press? And I'm very, very skeptical.
All right. Dr. Krishna, irrespective of what is the debate, the different narratives as far as what is happening in China is concerned, but when you look at the statistics themselves, if you have 60% of the population, a population of 1.4 billion people, to contract COVID-19, no matter what resources you have, your hospitals will definitely one day will be overwhelmed. Drugs will be out of stock. And you will really have to grapple with how to move forward. How do you see China navigating through this complex situation?
Yes, I think it will certainly be a difficult few weeks to months ahead. And China can certainly mobilize resources incredibly quickly and at scale. And that is some of what we're starting to see now to increase ICU beds to deal with the surge that is happening and continue to be expected. We also need to really ramp up vaccination amongst the high-risk vulnerable populations, as we've already heard. We also have to make sure that there are access to therapies. We have better therapies now for mild to moderate infection to prevent hospitalization. And we have seen news that those drugs are being made available in China now. The types of vaccines that are being used is something we should certainly look at to make sure that the most effective vaccines to prevent severe illness, hospitalization, and death are made available. So there are lots of mitigation measures that are possible. And when we talk about this idea of flattening the curve, if you could see the same number of infections happen over 6 months versus 6 weeks, you would give a lot more capacity for the health system to be able to deal with those challenges. So that's the phase we're really in now.
Dr. Wafa, you have those who would tell you COVID-19, as far as we are concerned, is a turned chapter. Gone were those days of massive concerns about our future. And then you have those who would tell you this could perhaps be similar to when we were in the midst of the dark tunnel with people really, really concerned about the future of humanity. From your own perspective, where do we stand now globally?
Well, I think and I believe that many other experts also would agree that we are not in a situation similar to where we were in the early 2020s. I think we're in a very different place. And part of the reason why we are in a different place today is that we know so much more about COVID-19. We know how to diagnose it. We have the tools to diagnose it. We know how to manage it. We know how to treat it. We know how to prevent it. So we have our knowledge in terms of what to do, how to prevent and manage COVID-19 appropriately is improved exponentially since those dark days of the early 2020s. I also think we have a very different population now. We have a population in many parts of the world that has largely had already experienced, people have experienced COVID with some protection from prior infection. Mm-hmm. We have high availability of vaccines, some better than others, and booster doses and so on. We have treatments, effective treatments. So I think we're in a very different place from where we were. But nonetheless, I think we need to, as much as we can, try to minimize transmission. It is not good to get COVID-19. Some people will get very sick. Some people are maybe at risk of long COVID, the long symptoms after an episode of COVID. So while we're in a very different place, I think we should continue to do our best to minimize transmission. And also for another reason is that we want to avoid the emergence of new variants that may be more transmissible, may be more fatal, may be able to outsmart our vaccines and treatments. So I do think we should appreciate that we're in a different place, but nonetheless, we should also appreciate that COVID is not gone. It's going to be with us, and we have to do whatever we can to protect the populations as much as possible, to protect the most vulnerable as much as possible, and to prevent transmission in order to avoid the evolution of new variants in the future.
Andy, was it a wise decision to lift the tough restrictions ahead of the next month's Lunar New Year holiday?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Hashim. I think the big unknown at this point is exactly how severe these variants are. And again, if they really are no worse than a common cold, having a billion plus people infected might not be that big of a deal. And from as far as I can tell, Beijing was the first major population center to be infected. We're seeing the same dynamic play out in Shanghai now. Last week, there was no one at work. You could not order anything online because all the delivery drivers were out sick. This week, pretty much things are returning to normal. And talking to people in Shanghai, mm-hmm. it sounds like a similar dynamic mm-hmm. is playing out. So I think the answer is that if indeed this is as infectious as, you know, with a reproduction number of 18-20, and not much worse than a common cold for most people, I think it does make sense to get it over as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Because we shouldn't ignore the extreme economic cost of this issue as well.
Dr. Krishna, India has stepped up preventive measures because of the concerns and fears about the BF7 strain of Omicron variant of COVID-19, which is now hitting the continent, the subcontinent. Should we be concerned about the mutations at this particular stage?
I think what we're starting to see is continued evolution, and we don't see with any of the emerging variants any overly concerning signs, even though, as we've seen with the lineage of BA5, which continues to be really the dominant force around the world, that the transmission rates are quite high. So we do need to continue to take appropriate measures. And I think especially with the wave that we're starting to see in China that is likely to lead to new variants, we need to make sure that our surveillance systems around the world mm-hmm. Are up to the task of identifying new variants, including potential variants of concern as they emerge, and ensuring that we are taking the mitigation approaches, whether those are appropriate changes to vaccines or treatments, or making sure we're protecting the most mm-hmm. vulnerable populations. So surveillance and mitigation continue to be really central measures that all countries need to take.
Okay. Very briefly, if you don't mind, Dr. Wafa, you said there needs to be a focus on those vulnerable. But then when you look at the way people are questioning the booster vaccine, their confidence has been eroded when it comes to the effectiveness of the vaccines. Do you think that it's about time for us to rethink the way we should have to deal with COVID from now onwards?
Yeah, I think we have to adjust our messaging, definitely. I think the messaging is very different from the messaging that we had to use before. And We're facing these headwinds of people who want to return to what they call normalcy, mm-hmm. And also populations that are their confidence in the vaccines have eroded over time, unfortunately. So I think our communications have to focus differently. We have to find champions within the communities, the vulnerable communities that can advocate to others within their community about why it's important to get the booster dose. And we have to use different messaging that's focused maybe more clearly that the goal of these vaccines is to prevent severe illness and death.
Okay.
And it is not to protect people against every single infection.
In less than 30 seconds, Andy, if you don't mind, do you think that the concerns about the second largest economy being battered constantly over the last 3 years, which made the government is saying it's about time to relax the restrictions?
Absolutely. I mean, this is not just a public health crisis, but it is an economic crisis, and it is a public opinion crisis as well. People were getting tired of the lockdowns. Fortunately, the virus has become less lethal, so I think we're able to move past this now and resume a trajectory, hopefully, of economic rebound.
Do you see, Dr. Krishna, the world going back to restrictions, lockdowns?
No, I think we're well past that stage. We are now transitioning in a messy way from the emergency response to something that needs to look like long-term COVID control. So the pandemic's not over, but we have to think about how to manage it effectively with all the tools that we now have available, without forgetting that we have lots of other health and other economic challenges ahead of us.
Ladies and gentlemen, I really appreciate your reassuring answer. Looking forward to talking to you in the near future. I promise you we'll continue to talk more and more about COVID-19 and its impact on our health and the global economy. Dr. Wafa Sadr, Andy Mark, Dr. Krishna Udayakumar, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahlbarra, and the entire team here in Doha, bye for now.